do you guys, like, all four go about being a part of it all?
Well, there's actually only three of us, not four of us.
Same thing. Our Patreon campaign is in full force. Patreon is like crowdfunding, but for supporting your favorite grassroots entertainment. As a special reminder, everyone that pledges in the month of May will get immediate shipment of their Bourbon Pursuit koozie and stickers. We have pledge amounts ranging from $1 to $50 a month. But what's in it for you, you may ask? For $1 a month, you get Patreon-only unedited content that doesn't make it in the show. In fact, today's episode has an additional 16 minutes of content you can only hear on Patreon. For $3 a month, you get a Bourbon Pursuit koozie and sticker. $5 a month gets you a Bourbon Pursuit t-shirt and entered into a monthly drawing for random swag. At $10 and $50 a month, we'll even send you a bourbon sample from the bar, including Pappy 15. We want to say thank you to everyone that has pledged, and we hope that you enjoy this podcast enough to help and support us. Your support is there to upgrade our podcast equipment and to continue to have awesome giveaways for our fans. So please visit patreon.com. That's patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. Welcome back to another episode of the Bourbon Pursuit Podcast. My name is Kenny, and we've got Ryan here today. We've also got some fellas from BreakingBourbon.com. But before we introduce them, you know, Ryan, have you checked out? There was something that came out this past week, and there was yet another E.H. Taylor release that's going to be called Four Grain. Did you see that come out?
I did not. I'd seen the release calendar where there was going to be an OFC in the Season Wood this year, and because of Cured Oaks last year, everybody's going to be hyped about the E.H. Taylor releases, but I did not see it, and I do not know much about it. What's going on with it?
Well, so this is something, and it's something that, of course, anything that hits the market, it's automatic news on Twitter and all the groups and everything like that, and everybody gives up in arms. But, you know, I kind of look at this, and I think, first it's called Four Grain. I saw somebody made a pretty funny comment. They're like, I guess it's corn, rye, wheat, and maybe quinoa or something like that. Like, what's that other grain? But, you know, they said, you know, is this going to be a dilution of the Taylor legacy? Because if you think about this, Buffalo Trace, you know, we've had Harlan on the show before. There's so many of these experimental releases or these experimental things that they're doing, and they need a label to put underneath, right? And I haven't seen a whole lot of the Buffalo Trace experimental collections come out, and so maybe they're just looking at a way to kind of hype up sales by putting underneath the E.H. Taylor train.
Yeah, I kind of wish they would leave that label alone and just keep it what it is. I was fine with the Cured Oak, I guess, because it's probably in my top three bourbons, but the Season Wood I had a little taste of and wasn't a big fan, but I don't like how they're experimenting with this label just because everything I've had of E.H. Taylor has been pretty solid, you know, so it's just kind of weird. I wish they'd keep it under the experimental collection label.
Yeah, I think I could do with like maybe one new label a year, but I
mean, yeah, like one release a year, but when they're starting to do three or four, then it's like, you know, they're just playing us.
Yeah, it's just all about the hype train, right?
So, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a good lead into our guest today. So today we have Jordan, Eric, and Nick. These three gentlemen are the authors to BreakingBourbon.com. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, guys. Good. So we're
to be the most people on the podcast we've ever done before.
Oh, exactly. We're trying to do five all over Skype. So we're going to try to do our best here. So I guess real quick. So I'll go first. I'll start with you, Jordan. So Jordan, tell us a little bit about, you know, your story and how you got into bourbon.
Sure. Sounds good. You know, I'm sure like many people started off in college, not really knowing what was going on. Got a bottle of Fighting Cock between me and my roommates. Definitely a rough next morning. Then more seriously, when I moved to Louisville after college many years ago, I, you know, like most places, bourbon and Diet Cokes were cheaper than beers in the bar. So you just started doing that. And then slowly the Coke got weaned off. And then it was a lot of ice and that got weaned off. And, you know, before I knew it, it was just Maker's or Woodford most of the time. And then slowly started expanding out, you know, a bottle of Basil Hayden, getting into Booker's. It was just, it just went from there and just a slow, slow love and affinity for it that grew from it.
It seems like a common tale between amongst all of us, right?
Definitely.
It's the same progression for everyone.
Exactly. So yeah, Eric and Nick, yourselves?
So this is Nick here. So, you know, my story, again, kind of similar to Jordan's there. You know, you certainly, you know, I certainly had it, but never, you know, recognized it for what it was, so to speak. And in fact, it was Jordan's time in Louisville, Kentucky that, you know, of course, when in Rome, you know, inspired, you know, trip to Maker's Mark, you know, and then flights of bourbon. We were doing a flight of turkeys, which was four different wild turkeys, you know, in a bar. And then, in fact, probably the first, maybe one of the first bourbon hunts, if you want to call it that, in Louisville, Kentucky, of course, at a time when, you know, you could probably pick up Pappy on the shelf and quite frankly, didn't know what Pappy was, but, you know, then kind of went from there. You know, he went from having a bottle, you know, in the cabinet, you know, to a few, and of course, get into that, you know, later on as that progressed, but, how I met bourbon.
Now, I had a similar story too. I mean, it was all Jordan living in Louisville, you know, they kind of introduced us from up, you know, in upstate New York around bourbon. It's not part of, you know, society so much. So up here, so it was the many, many visits to Jordan down there that, you know, every bar has it, every restaurant has it. You have flights, you have these options, you have liquor stores that have large selections, you know, unlike anything we get up kind of up here. And that has changed over the years. But definitely at the time, we had more experience, you know, exposure to it, really.
So the spark was ignited. And how did that lead into you all coming together and wanting to start a website? So kind of talk about the fascination and how that grew to the point where you said, okay, I think we could have some fun with this and start blogging and making articles and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So, you know, actually the story starts, you know, maybe well before that is, you know, the three of us, grew up together in Rochester, New York, you know, goes as far back as memory serves me. I'm going to guess the second grade since we've been friends. But, you know, from that point, you know, this was after college that Jordan was in Louisville and, you know, really put bourbon on the radar, so to speak. And, you know, seeing each other only maybe a couple times a year, you know, that had kind of a snowball effect where, you know, it went from recognition of bourbon to, you know, well, let's buy some new bourbons. Let's bring some bourbons. You know, let's try some different bourbons every time we get together. We had a get together, and Eric was living in Rochester still at that time, Rochester, New York. And we were getting together for the weekend, and we said, hey, let's kind of do like an official, you know, bourbon tasting, buy Glencairn glasses and really, you know, take some notes and have get a little more in depth with it. So we probably bought way too many bottles, you know, leading up to that. I'm going to say we each, you know, brought maybe 15 bottles to the table that weekend. I don't think we got through all of them. I want to say we maybe got through like 30, 35 of them at best. But from that point, bourbon became more of an everyday discussion, you know, and we started this Google Hangout at that point and realized, you know what, we're talking about bourbon every day. We're starting to look for different bourbons. We had never really been on our minds that much before. And so a few months later, you know, the idea came up, why not start a website, you know, or a blog? So around 9 months or so of planning, you know, tweaking, you know, trying to get the design to look, to feel the way we wanted. And, you know, the layout the way we wanted, we went through around 10 iterations of kind of what Breaking Bourbon could have looked like until we landed on, you know, the basic concept and layout that you see today. You know, aside from some minor tweaks over the past few years, you know, that concept has remained about the same. You know, and so now we're at 2 years and bourbon has become very much a daily part of our lives. And it's just been wonderful, you know, and enjoyable to, you know, to kind of grow with that and, you know, experience that.
So I guess a good question for you, because, you know, I started a blog at one point in my life back in the, my tech career. So what was your first article? I'm sorry, I didn't look back and kind of look at it, but what was your kind of like hello world in regards to your blog?
It's really interesting. So we kind of planned it, right? We wanted to seed the site a little bit. So in order to get the site up and running, we actually had, I want to say around 20 reviews that we had fully established and well vetted between the three of us before we launched it. And then it wasn't until a few months later that we actually started doing articles on the website. And one of the earliest ones was probably Nick's bourbon storage experiment.
Right. So we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I think sure. one of the things that I really like is all the reviews you have, right? Because how many reviews have you all done now? Because it's been a lot.
You know, I think we're encroaching. We passed our 100th review, and I think we're coming up on about 125 so far.
So with all these, I mean, you guys are going out and you're buying a lot of these bottles, right? So at least it's spread amongst three of you. I couldn't imagine like one person having to go out and buy all these different bottles just to be able to have a sip out of it, right?
Nice write-off.
It's kind of where the site, you know, kind of came from too. We like to joke about because it justified buying these bottles from our wives. Because now we're buying bottles so we can write about them, and because people like to read about it. So we had readers. So it smoothed it over to a degree, but you know, of course, not completely.
Right. We'll try to make up any excuse we can to try to get past on that boat. So I guess a good question for you all, because one thing is, I've showed pictures of my bar before, and I am a diehard Kentucky. I would say 99% of the bottles that I have all come from the great state of Kentucky. But, you know, when I look at y'all's reviews, like it's hard to find 100 different bottles, even from the state of Kentucky. So kind of give us at least some of the readers, like a good glowing difference of something that's very different that you would find from Kentucky versus something that's from out of state that you would get. I mean, I'm looking at the website right at the front of me, something that's like a barrel versus a Hill Haven versus something like that.
Yeah, sure. So this is Jordan. I think one of the benefits that we have is, you know, we do a lot of reviews both in bourbon from Kentucky. And then thankfully my job really allows me to travel all over the place. So I've been able to get a lot of small distilleries, in different states, and get a lot of their bottles and really try them out. And it's always interesting. I mean, clearly what Kentucky is going for is age and stock, right? A lot of these small upstart distilleries, and we've seen some good ones, we've definitely seen some bad ones, but it all comes down to they just don't have the age or the stock to go through to come out with some of their releases. But it is really interesting to see the different grains or different regions of the country and how aging affects the product they're putting out. Me, Nick, and Eric all have a lot of fun with looking at different bourbons, you know, especially ones that are outside of Kentucky.
So let's take Smooth Ambler out of this, because they have a pretty good array of stock. So if you had to choose a state or a different bourbon or whiskey outside of the state of Kentucky, what are you going to go with as something that ranks up towards the top for you?
One in particular that, the question broke up a little bit, but I think you're looking for one that jumps out is the Hill Rock Estate Solera Age Bourbon. Now, granted, you know, some of that was sourced, but, you know, that just has just this layered depth to it. And that is one that we reviewed recently that, you know, it is just really delicate and has a lot going on. It's very subtle with what it has going on. It's not a cheap bourbon by any means. It's around $90. But that's one that stands out, and it's always a treat to have that one. Of course, it's not a treat to pay for it, but that's what it is. There's another really interesting one for folks, something you don't see a lot, but one of the distilleries we toured, Catskill Distilling Company in New York State, has a buckwheat whiskey. And it's one of only a few buckwheat whiskeys, at least that I've heard about, that's made anywhere. And they use the buckwheat grain. It has kind of a different earthy, you know, taste to it, but it's something you can't get, you know, anywhere else, or you don't really see anywhere else.
I was about to say, that's the new one for me, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm reading about this Big Bottom small batch. That looks pretty interesting, and it's got one of your highest reviews. Go over that one a little bit.
Big Bottom is a distillery out of Oregon. They're really cool in the fact that, you know, they're like many distilleries, they're distilling their own spirit currently. But in the past, they've sourced their spirit from other distilleries. But they took it a step further. Not only did they source it, they also then let it age for a few additional seasons inside of Oregon to really show, you know, the variation of that Pacific Northwest climate, how it has on the aging process. So they make some really great products. That Big Bottom small batch, that single barrel, was really quite delicious. And I think we're all looking forward to seeing the future products that come out of that distillery, especially using 100% of their own spirit.
Come in contact with some of these distillers. So from traveling or people sending you stuff?
You know, we do accept samples, but a majority of the small distilleries that we're able to review for the site comes a lot. You know, this is Jordan again. Thankfully, I'm able to travel a lot for my job. Takes me to all random places. And of course, wherever I go, I always look for a local distillery and a local liquor store to see what they're carrying. And you know, if there's something new I haven't seen that we haven't reviewed before, always try and pick up a bottle.
Nice. Big Bottom's about to go crazy on the secondary market after this.
And so the last thing about your reviews, I thought that was really interesting, was your 100th review. You did a tribute to Bottled and Bond. So talk about that one real quick.
So, you know, the 100th review, you know, you try to do something special, that kind of thing. You know, the idea of Bottle and Bond, obviously 100 proof. And, you know, we kind of couldn't really think of what's a really special single bourbon to do, you know, a review on. And, you know, others, in fact, Sign D, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but, you know, kind of bourbon blogger friend of ours did a kind of tribute to Bottled and Bonds for his 100th review and really thought that was a great idea. And in fact said, you know, they, why not do that? You know, the concept basically is, you know, hey, you've got these outstanding bourbons that are oftentimes, you know, low cost, you know, bottom shelf pricing, but not bottom shelf quality, you know, so to speak. And since we try to, you know, kind of cover the realm of, you know, the high cost special releases that are hard to get, as well as, you know, those that are everyday bourbons that are, you know, lower cost and affordable and attainable and that kind of thing. You know, we were kind of also, you know, maybe due for doing a few of those. And, you know, Bottled and Bonds, of course, are a lot of people's favorites and daily drinkers, you know, out there. So, you know, we figured why not dedicate to that. We do hopefully plan on, you know, hitting up the rest of the Bottled and Bonds, or at least as many as of them as we can get in the future here. But, you know, that was a fun little month, you know, to do that. And Heaven Hill, Bottled and Bonds, you know, 6 year. I know you guys are in Kentucky. Boy, that's a great bourbon to have for $11 right in your backyard.
Oh, it is. Definitely. It is. Don't tell anyone.
So I guess one more question about the reviews now, because you guys go really in depth in reviews, and this is one thing that I'm not very good at doing is explaining what I'm drinking. And you guys are able, you guys like self-taught in the way that you can say, you know, what you're smelling or what you're getting off it and how the taste lingers or anything like that? Or have you had some sort of like training to be able to understand exactly like what you're tasting?
No, you know, that's just us and our own taste palates and years of drinking a lot of different bourbons and a lot of different spirits and slowly just building up our palates that way. I mean, like most things in life, it's, you know, the more experience you get at something, the better you get at it. And right. Thankfully for us, that means drinking more and more bourbon.
Yeah, so professional drinkers, right? That's an easy one.
Yeah, you know, it's honestly, at the end of the day, you know, as some people, you know, sometimes even we might, you know, maybe sound like experts, so to speak. But, you know, I always like to say at the end of the day, we're just regular guys who drink a lot of bourbon. I mean, anybody can if they really, you know, if you're thinking about it, they may taste different things than us. You know, other people are going to taste things we don't taste. I mean, there's really no right or wrong answer. You know, you like what you like. Every palate is different. You know, that's sometimes those comments come in of, you know, how could you possibly, you know, have thought this was that good, or how could you have possibly thought this was that bad? You know, and it's that idea that, well, it's fine if you disagree. You know, not everybody has to like the same things. You know, that in fact, it may taste very different to somebody, you know, than it does to, you know, to us, so to speak. So even those newer drinkers, I think, who are maybe starting to get a little more technical, but maybe get intimidated by, you know, those tasting notes and, you know, and our tasting notes, or anybody's, you know, that has that, you know, by any stretch of means, it's anything but that. You know, it's a way to try to explain, you know, some of those nuances that we pick up, you know, that somebody else may or may not pick up. They may pick up more, you know, but that idea that anybody, you know, at any level, you know, can experience bourbon, you know, for how they want to experience it, you know, and there's really no right or wrong. You know, there's no, this is good, this is bad. It's whatever you think it is, you know?
Absolutely. So we headed at it earlier and talking about the bourbon storage experiment. So give the listeners an idea of A, what this bourbon storage experiment was all about, and then some of the findings as well.
So the basic concept with the storage experiment was to, you know, take those, you know, those qualitative things that you kind of hear of what people kind of notice in their bourbon over the years, and generally how people talk about, you know, how they think it should be stored, the ideal conditions, things like that, and say, you know, let's put it to a test. Let's just see how some of this stuff turns out for our own fun, but why not document it for the site too, you know, since we have that outlet. And so the concept there was not necessarily to put bourbon through like real world storage and ideal, you know, situations, but more, let's test the extremes of these situations to see maybe just how bad it might get. And so it laid out the concept of let's taste this thing over, you know, bourbon over a 2 year period, basically trying it at, you know, at 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, which is coming up in August. So we'll be posting those results soon. Gotta be honest, I'm a little bit nervous about drinking someone's bourbon after having it 12 months. But
so let's start from the beginning. So what bourbon did you use?
So we used Weller Special Reserve, and in fact, pulled it all from the same 175. So going for consistency, and then put that into 2 ounce containers. And then what those containers were a full container, a two-thirds and a one-third container, so that then you take each of those containers and you put them into three different storage locations, a refrigerator, a dark closet, and in direct sunlight. And the concept there is then, all right, so now we're going to test one of those container groups at 6 months from each storage location. We're going to test another container group at 12 months, and we're going to test another container group at 24 months. And we're going to see how these different fill levels and different storage locations over different periods of time kind of affect the bourbon, and see what, just how bad it might get, or maybe where the best, you know, the best bourbon might lie by a comparison.
So I'm going to put my hypothesis in here real quick before we get to the results, right? I'm going to go ahead and just guess that the best storage location is going to be in a dark place, and the worst is going to be in direct sunlight. But go ahead. That's just my guess.
Well, so yeah, and exactly. You know, one of the surprises, though, you know, doing that was that the bourbon that was the one-third fill in the dark closet, and actually the refrigerator too, those one-third fills actually tasted quite a bit better than the full fills by comparison at 6 months. So that concept of having the bourbon kind of open and breathing a little bit, you know, you always hear about that. Well, that was really pretty evident, you know, when we tasted them blind, you know, for that 6 month test. Comparing with the sunlight, it, you know, 6 months didn't really, you know, starting to get kind of bad, you know, definitely noticeable. 12 months, some of them were, they were pretty darn hard to drink. I'll put it that way. I can't remember what the exact tasting note was, but certainly not things you want.
Shitty.
In bourbon. Yeah, that was basically it.
So what do you most anticipated for the 12 month, or sorry, for the 24 month version then?
You know, so one of the things that changed between 6 and 12 was that the one-third fill started to not be quite as good. So we're anticipating that at 24 months, we're going to find that, you know, the full fill, you know, the dark closet and possibly the refrigerator too, really, really pull ahead of those lower fills. And the sunlight, again, it's like, how can it get much worse? Well, it might be able to get worse. You know, who knows? Also, to know, as this thing's kind of big and broad, and it's easier to look at probably on a screen with the photos than talk about. But we also tested we used an amber bottle to test that in the sun to say, you know, it's kind of funny because bourbon, unlike, you know, like beer, for example, they put in clear bottles because you want to see the color, you know, I assume for marketing purposes and so forth. But that doesn't really bode well. You know, the amber bottle, it turns out, really did protect that bourbon to some extent from the sunlight, you know, and in a real world, you know, we've seen liquor stores that have, you know, big windows, and they have some of their best bourbons up, you know, on display in front of those windows. And you start to think, well, that thing's dusty. How long has that been there? You know, is that really something I want to buy? You know, so it's that. Yeah, you probably shouldn't have it in the sun. Yeah, it's best in a dark closet and that, but really that question of how bad does it really get? You know, we'll find out how bad it gets in coming up in August here.
It's so interesting because I opened up one of my Pappy 20s back in 2014. You know, it still tastes great. And then after the antique collection hunt this year, I opened up a 2015 William Ure Weller. And as soon as I drank it, I was so disappointed because, I mean, I hated it because it tasted like a big bag of black licorice. And it's just something that, like, I just didn't like, right? So I put it away and I came back to it, like, probably 3 months later, and it was completely different. And I love it now. And so I guess there is some truth to what you say on the fill levels, right? But I guess a question that I'll pose to you is that once you open a bottle of bourbon, how long do you think you have until you need to drink it all?
You know, that's a great question. And that catapults into what is going to be the follow-up to the storage experiment, which would be a second storage experiment, which is in the works right now. And will launch probably around the time the first one ends. But the, you know, the basic idea there is, all right, let's kind of filter out the, you know, the stuff we know you shouldn't do, you know, and let's maybe start looking at stuff that maybe you might really do in a real world and see how that goes. And I'm not going to give details of that yet because that's still to be launched. But, you know, the idea there is to kind of zero in on that question a little bit, you know, as far as that goes. I've always heard one third, you know, once you kind of get to one third, maybe it's time to kind of, you know, get into a small
finish city. It off.
Bring your friends over, send it to us, just shoot us an email, we'll send you our address, you can forward it on. But, you know, it's that idea that it definitely does change, you know, at some points in that change, they might be for the positive, and at some points it might be for the negative. So, you know, if you do have those bottles, especially the better bottles that are sitting there for a long time, you know, it's probably not a bad idea to kind of, you know, sip them every once in a while. And maybe keep an eye or pour them once, you know, once in a while to see how they're doing, because they can get worse.
Exactly.
I'm terrible at that. When I have a third left, I'm like, don't drink it whatsoever, because I don't want to get rid of it, because I want to just hang on to it. But I guess I should just drink it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we had a on this topic. There was a bottle of Four Roses Private Select barrel proof. In fact, if I remember correctly, the highest proof I've ever seen in a Four Roses single barrel, but it was a bottle Eric had, and he gave me a sample, and this was many years ago, and it was and I just had this jar, you know, this pretty big jar, and he poured me like an ounce, and I forgot about it, and probably like 6 months, 9 months or so went by, so it was pretty much mostly air, and then a little bit of bourbon at the bottom. And finally said, all right, I got that Four Roses, give that a shot. And keep in mind, this is high proof, which high proof is supposedly supposed to stand up a little bit better. When I tell you this was bad, this is like, unlike the storage experiment, this is like sip it, you got to spit it out, you almost throw up kind of bad. You know? So that was bourbon gone really bad. I've heard people say it can't go bad or it won't go bad. That was bad. That was as bad as it gets.
I believe you. I believe it goes bad.
They'll attest to it.
Yeah, I mean, I believe
you. Yeah, I've always heard if it doesn't get air, then it doesn't go bad, as long as you keep the top on it.
No, yeah, I don't believe that, because as soon as you, I mean, if you take the top off, right, you're still letting, there's more air in there that allows more alcohol to kind of dissipate or whatever the technical term is for it.
Yeah, that's the oxidation, you know, certainly your fill level oxidation, and then obviously the design of the cork, you know, they dry out, you know, the less bourbon there is in there, the less moisture there may be in a cork. You know, one thing I noticed was, you know, keeping empty bottles, you know, for various reasons, you know, I had a bottle of 1792 that was empty, you know, lo and behold, a few months later, that cork, you just pull that thing in and out of the bottle, you know, so no more moisture left inside the bottle, didn't keep the cork wet enough to keep a nice seal, you know, so air is the enemy. You know, maybe it helps a little bit to some extent once you crack it open, and like you said, with the Weller, but you know, outside of that, you don't really want, I don't think you really want too much air, you know, so you want to keep a nice tight seal on those bottles.
So what we're
I gotta start drinking.
Yeah, and start putting them all to work, right?
You guys should be drinking now, right?
Exactly.
Should be. So I guess that's kind of a good segue as we're talking about like good expensive bottles. Let's kind of talk about the release calendar, right? Because that's one of your other most popular articles that you have on your site.
Yeah. So I'm not even sure if the other guys, I've never really quite talked about this, you know, so I'm a graphic designer by trade, and when we were, you know, building the site out and that sort of thing, I kind of had this idea to pull together this ongoing list of new releases, because, you know, who doesn't like a list? So
I'm a sucker for a list.
So actually,
you put it on a list, I'm buying it.
So years ago, when I was doing like web design, that sort of thing, as a hobby, really when I was a teenager, I was doing a film website as a little side thing, not too unlike, you know, Breaking Bourbon here. And at the time, this was, you know, in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of sites that were doing release lists for movies. And I started kind of putting it together for movies. And really at the time, too, before all the superhero movies, you would only get a couple years at the most. So, and that kind of took off there a little bit. But then, you know, as you go to college and, you know, life starts happening, you know, the movie website kind of went under, and I moved on and to other projects and that sort of thing. You know, so when we started doing this website, you know, I kind of brought that same idea back, where it was to keep track of all the new releases that are coming out all the time. There wasn't, you know, it's tough to find that kind of information all in one place, you know, for every new release, at least with bourbon, you know, unlike maybe scotch and, you know, other spirits, there's a lot coming out, but it's a manageable number to kind of create a list. That's something I can do outside of my regular job.
So I guess the first question I'm going to put towards you is, yeah, how the hell do you get all this information?
Oh, it's just constantly keeping an eye out and ear out for this kind of stuff. You know, you're talking to liquor stores, you're talking to people who live in Kentucky, which, you know, they tend to get the information first, you know, and the releases first. You know, social media, all that stuff. You know, a lot of people, you know, especially nowadays with secondary, you know, people buy a bottle, it's up on the, you know, they'll post it, you know, take a picture in the car, it's up on the internet, and then I get an idea, all right, that bottle is on the market, so I can put it, well, I know that bottle is out this month. And that's the other thing with, you know, with the release calendars and with bourbon is, it isn't, you know, it comes out maybe in Kentucky, but, you know, say for most of the country, it won't come out for another month or two, you know, especially even, you know, what we see in New York, we're months behind. So, you know, so it's unlike other media, like, you know, albums, you know, movies, video games, any of that stuff, you know, that stuff all kind of comes out on the same release day throughout the country. Bourbon is a little different, you know, states can be months and months behind.
So if there's anything that you're looking at, maybe that's outside of the typical, like, super mega fall release when all the good stuff really starts coming out. But I shouldn't say that. There's good stuff that comes out all year. But, I mean, I guess I'll pose this to each one of you, right? And you can each kind of throw your own favorite out there. So what's something that you're excited about that's not going to be during the regular fall release schedule?
That's not BTAC or Pappy?
Basically, yeah.
Well, we're in a good little spot right now. There's some big players coming out in the next, you know, this month and next, that we don't generally see this kind of bubble like we're having, you know, coming up here. So, I mean, for me personally, it's the Knob Creek 2001, the 15-year. You know, Knob Creek's one of my personal favorites, especially the single barrel. And, you know, I'm interested to see if this is going to even improve on that more.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to see about that too. You know, that actually just hit here. So you can get actually the Knob Creek 2001. Yeah, now, everybody that's out there, I know there's somebody showed me a picture the other day. So there's three different batches and there's over 12,000 bottles in each batch. So it's not like you need to run out real quick and get it. I think there's going to be plenty of them floating around, but it also comes with a high price point. I think almost $150 was retail around here for it.
Yeah, and yeah, for myself, it's going similar to what Eric said. So it's staying in the Jim Beam family. It's Booker's Rye, right? Another one, a lot of bottles, smaller release than Knob for sure, but that price tag is really astronomical. That being said, still looking forward to seeing, you know, what an aged rye from Jim Beam with a slightly different mash bill tastes like. I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, I think you're not going to have any shortage of people that are going to be going ape shit over that bottle, even at $300 a pop.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. Honestly, the Wild Turkey Master's Keep decades, you know, curious to see how that's going to taste. You know, the previous few Wild Turkey special releases have been interesting. You know, what's interesting about Wild Turkey is they put out, you know, such phenomenal everyday bourbons, and then the wild release or the I'm sorry the special releases have been, you know, not necessarily, you know, is that the absolute best thing they have? You know, so I feel like they've been getting better and better, and you know, and they really have a, you know, a tried and true process and all that good stuff. You know, so really excited to see kind of a higher proof on what might be maybe a kind of similar flavor profile to last year's Master's Keep.
Yeah, speaking of that, Matt Gandolfo just talked to me the other day about, and he's got some samples of that for us. So I'm interested to see that as well. Yes.
Favorite guest so far. You guys need to catch up.
Yeah. That's right.
So I guess the one thing that I'm looking forward is because, you know, after Jim Rutledge left Four Roses, there was this, you know, this huge hole, right? People were kind of like, who's going to take over? Like, this guy is an icon of the bourbon industry. And so this is kind of, you know, Brett Elliott's first real kind of foray into releasing something that's special. So the Four Roses single, because actually last year they put a halt on it. There was no 2015 release of the limited edition single barrel, but now they're bringing it back. So this is called the Elliott Select or whatever it is. So I'm excited to kind of see, you know, what's going to be coming out of Four Roses. But then again, I've never had a bad Four Roses. It just depends on the price point, right? So with that, I think we're reaching towards the end of this here. So if you guys have anything other kind of closing remarks or anything you want to say, first off, get another plug to your website and how people can get a hold of you and your Twitter account and all that sort of stuff.
So you can find us online at breakingbourbon.com. You can also connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We use the same handle for all three. That's @breakingbourbon. Additionally, be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter for exclusive content and to also visit Slate frequently to keep up with our daily release calendar updates and weekly posts.
Awesome. So also, if you guys like what you're hearing on Bourbon Pursuit, make sure you follow us as well, right? I mean, while you're following them on Twitter, make sure you follow us at Bourbon Pursuit. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook as well as iTunes. Please also support us on Patreon.com. That's patreon.com/Bourbon Pursuit. Just a final reminder, if you are supporting us in the month of May, we will be shipping out all the koozies and stickers to all those people that pledge in May, so you don't actually have to wait the full 3 or 4 months. I forget what I put on there, but it's a good incentive for you to hurry up and support us, and we can start getting those orders for our koozies in. So, Ryan, close us out.
Yeah, and we need a more $50 Patreon so that Kenny's bourbon collection can dwindle.
I think there's two of them already. So if anybody that doesn't know that, so he's even on Patreon, there's actually there's a $50 pledge amount, and that means you get a sample of Pappy Van Winkle 15 year that we will ship to you.
That's a cheap buy. I mean, hell, if you're in New York, that's probably $100 or more. So yeah, I just appreciate y'all coming on, guys. The calendar is a go-to for me, and I'm, like I said, if you're a sucker for lists, the site is where it's at, because it's beautifully broken down, like all the reviews by rating, by, you know, brands. It makes it really easy to kind of thumb your way through a lot of stuff if you haven't had it yet. So appreciate y'all, the work you all do.
Well, hey, we appreciate that, guys. And actually, didn't get a chance to say it yet, but, you know, you guys are doing a fantastic job yourselves. You know, we've been listening to your podcast since the beginning, and, you know, just down to earth, great information, you know, on just about on every single one. You know, and so certainly, you know, excellent job. You know, looking forward to hearing more from you guys and seeing that continue.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. Yep. So with that, we will see you all later. This podcast of Bourbon Pursuit is in partnership with thewhiskeywash.com, a lifestyle website for news and reviews for people who like whiskey. And for those who think a life without whiskey has no style, thewhiskeywash.com. Are you still listening? Well, awesome. So I'll give you one more teaser to give you one more reason to go and support us on patreon.com. Here's another blooper from today's show.
So you guys are BTAC guys, huh?
Oh, easily.
Kenny is. He's a BTAC junkie.
We always call it BTAC. And then we heard somebody say BTAC. They were like, BTAC? Never heard that before. And then we realized, we're like, maybe we're the ones who are kind of strange here. So we actually posed a question on social media a while back. It actually got about 50-50 response. You know, it's kind of funny how some people just picked it up one way, saying it one way, and other people picked it up saying it the other way.
That was pretty good, right? Listen to an additional 15 minutes of today's episode at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/bourbonpursuit.